afternoon, everyone here at Y. Welcome again here at one of the coolest, podiums there is here at Y. And it's actually, I hope everyone drank enough, especially water. And if you want to become an AV angel, a camera angel, or somewhere else, those guys need still a lot of help. So if you want to do a shift, go just to heaven. And they also have a great food. If you want to communicate also for the live stream, it's actually just go to the IRC chat, Y2025, and then you can actually also ask some questions. So that's really cool. I have the pleasure to actually introduce one of the coolest speaker, I think, about from the whole weekend, and it's actually to open source the MRI devices. They're doing it at a fraction of the price, and it's a global community, one of the hardest hardware and open source hardware projects there is, I've been told. And I'm going to give the word to one of the cool hackers, because you have quite a difference in hackers. You have the hackers who do it in their free time, and you have hackers like actually Moeren, who actually stopped with their job to dedicate their time full time to a project. Give a big applause to Moeren.
Thank you very much for the kind introduction. Hello, I'm Mo from the Open Source Imaging Initiative. And it's a community of mainly researchers and developers that develop, well, open source imaging devices, mainly for medical imaging. And the main efforts focus on MRI scanners. So the machines we're talking about look like these room-filling, multi-million euro machines that have their own dedicated infrastructure so that they can feast on the power structure and have explosion mechanisms if the helium expands and so on. Very expensive, and these very dedicated personnel as well to run. And this also limits the global supply on MRI. So if you look at the numbers, MRI scanners per million in Europe or in the global north, we see something like between 10 and 40 per million people. And you can say, okay, we need to act here or there. MRI scans are already limited in the global north. But as soon as you go more towards low and middle income countries, the numbers heavily drop towards zero or like one digits. So that's a very heavy shift. And that's partly because the scanners are so expensive. So MRI scans itself are very powerful. You can see a lot of things. You can see soft tissue. There is no radiation involved. So it's really cool. But as said, price is the most limiting factor. So on top of the multi-million euro investments that you have to acquire one of these scanners, you have about 10% annual investment for maintenance costs and calibration, and the market is heavily monopolized. So there's three companies that dominate the global market, and so also the supply on MRI scanners. And I was working with people that said, I'm developing PCBs that could be produced at €5 costs for MRI scanners, but they're sold for 400 because they have this medical device stamp on them, and because there's only three suppliers. So the solution to make these scanners cheaper isn't going to cut it. If you want to have healthcare more accessible, we have to make them open source. And here is OZ1, the first scanner, or the first prototype we built. One of the first ones is here, and the first thing that you see, it's a lot smaller, so it's for head and limbs, and it's on wheels. And that is, I think, one of the most groundbreaking innovations in that case, because usually these scanners are highly immobile, and everything has to come to the scanners. So especially in the low and middle income country, you need to have several days traveling to the capital or whatever if you want to have an MRI scan. And this one runs on usual plugs, so you could have it in your home, basically. Some system specs. So we operate on a much lower field strength. So usually you have 1, 2, 3, 7 and more Tesla per system. We have 50 millitesla. And that is also the main reason why the bore is smaller. So 30 centimeters for head and extremities, but still enough to take pictures. As said, it's a mobile system, and it could, in theory, be battery-powered. The picture you just saw is a scanner that runs on 12 volts. So you could even put it in your car. and the material costs are obscenely low. So we're talking about 20 to sometimes 30,000 euros material costs, depending on the environment that you have available to replicate the scanner. So we had a rebuild in Uganda, for instance, that were about 24,000 because of customs and legal stuff. And yeah, everything is open source. Under this link, you can see the assembly instructions, the design files, go build your scanner. Applications is something we're still looking for. Of course, the goal is to go into the clinic and scan patients, but these low-cost push MRI scanning into a domain where it wasn't possible before. So we're yet evaluating what we could do with that. So, of course, clinical in vivo scanning is a very high bar, and there's a couple of lower-hanging fruits for us. One thing is veterinary medicine, so cats, dogs, birds, they're happy to have a picture at all. Some industrial applications, something like scanning eggs and see if they're fertilized, or also just research and education, because you can build the MRI scanner with a study group and do MRI scans in a seminar room. Talking of that, there is a mini version of the of OSI that you can 3D print in large parts and have tiny magnets. The electronics are mostly the same, so you can experimentate with different designs of gradient coils and so on without running into issues of the large design. And it still has the same field strength. Okay, that sounds all pretty great, but let's take a closer look into the design itself. The first question I always get is pictures. So we know low field, can I see anything, actually? And there's a nice study on that. It's a little small for, but maybe if you have good eyesight, you can, there's also the slides afterwards that I can share. But this basically compares a 3 Tesla clinic system, quite a good quality system with our field strength on the left. And it's the same patient, and you can see that tube or something very easy to spot in here. So of course you get a little bit more noise and lower resolution, but it's still enough for most of the diagnosis you're actually intending to do. And here's a picture of a knee with our system, actually taken in Leiden in the Netherlands at LUMC. And the same clinic took pictures of a dead dog that was concerningly easy to get into the scan. But yeah, so it also shows a little bit how high the resolution can get there. And this is a brain of one of our developers in Berlin, yet with no further calibration or post-processing of the image. So that's just the raw quality we got from a pretty raw build. That's pretty decent. So then how does it work and why is it so cheap? And I don't want to dive into all of the modules because the magic actually happens in all of the modules, but one of the most costly ones is the magnet. So usually the large scanners have superconductors and those have liquid helium, and then you have a dedicated infrastructure to run all of that and the technicians around that. And that's also, yeah, that's all very expensive, makes it immobile and very hard to replicate, especially if you don't have all of that fancy stuff within reach. And that, yeah, of course, in low and middle income settings. So instead, we use permanent magnets, quite strong ones, but permanent, in a special array, Halbach or Rome. And that looks like this. So it's essentially rings with a special orientation in the pockets for each of the magnets. You place them there manually, and then this array enhances the field towards the center and cancels out on the outside. In fact, fridge magnets have the same array, but flat. So that's why the fridge magnet is on one side facing you, pretty much unmagnetic, but towards the fridge it is magnetic. So then you have a lot of these and stack them together. And that makes a three-dimensional, pretty homogeneous field. But of course, you have a lot of inconsistencies in the magnets themselves, how strong they are, in which direction the magnetization is, in the manufacturing itself. And these imperfections are then balanced out with a process called shimming. There's little pockets here, and then you have trays with smaller magnets that then kind of like balance out the field here or there based on measurements you did in the center. That's a lot of manual work mainly, so if you have cheap manual labor available, it shouldn't be too expensive to replicate the magnet because you need about 2,000 something of these magnets and stack them, and they're not so charming to work with because they don't want to stick into the pockets. If you want to know more also about the other modules, there is a 7.5 hours long talk on YouTube. I can share the links in the slides, and then I've actually met people that watched through all of the 7 hours, and there you get the details about the gradient amplifiers and so on. Okay, a word on the history. How could it all happen? At first, there was, of course, the idea that was aired at a very large MRI conference, the ISMRM 2016, where the question was, what happens if we can build MRI scanners open source because we have this accessibility issue? So, and then the reactions basically split into two camps. One camp said it's impossible to do MRIs open source because it's far too complex. And the other camp said, well, that's actually true. MRIs should be done open source because they're so complex. And with that, we could form a first hardcore of people that believed in the mission, and we built Cozy Measure, that is a measuring robot we need for measuring the field strength in the bore. So a machine that we needed anyways, and published everything open source, and built a website where other people can publish their stuff as well. And that looks like that. That's live. By that, we could invite people to publish their designs, and we would review them. And with that, there grew a fairly large ecosystem of different software and hardware developments in the MRI field. That still wasn't enough to build a scanner, but it was enough to raise the evidence that a scanner would be possible, and that led to a large European-funded project where we actually built one. So this is the system in Leiden and LUMC. And that is right now running a study on patients to demonstrate the clinical value of it. And now we're at the stage of sustainable community building. We have an independent legal body in place that acts on behalf of the community only, so something like a trusted partner to interact with, because before it was all university clinics or research institutes all across the globe that have their own agenda, but now we have one independent body you can actually talk to. And with that, we can also build strategic partnerships, like with different journals. Link works. It does here, yeah. So submission deadline is still until March next year. So if you want to develop or are developing open source MRI hardened software, you can submit it to the journal and make a publication out of that. And we aim to make this a running scheme because development, of course, is ongoing. And it's all about growing sensibly. So because there's a lot to manage and we don't have the resources for professional management yet, so we need to know each other and build the structures as we grow. Also because there isn't so many projects we can copy mechanisms from, because to my knowledge, it's one of the actually largest and most complex open source hardware project, together with people that are new to open source. So there's a lot of education also that needs to happen internally and things we have to figure out. Okay, what's next? One thing that is already happening is our community-based conformity assessment. So the website you've seen was some sort of review, and that's some sort of reliable. And there is actually a standard that we co-developed that sets community standards for documentation. So what is the minimum baseline for open source hardware? And yeah, as you see, the scanner and the entire ecosystem depends a lot on a healthy ecosystem because it's too large to be developed by one group. So we rely on hardware that comes from different angles. However, that sometimes comes with very mixed documentation quality. So like, I don't know, PDFs that don't tell you anything or only STLs that you can't really post-process or further develop. And also sometimes very unreliable licensing with non-commercial licenses somewhere hidden or only for research, and that doesn't go very well together. And so by that, we hope to develop and promote community standards that we develop together with the community, and then the technical documentation becomes better. And we need reviewers. So if you're into electronics, you don't need to be into MRI or software and safety, medical devices is a plus. Please contact me and we can onboard you. And then with that, we can cover a wide range of different technologies. Different ongoing project is open sourcing building an open source reference system. by also open sourcing the certification side, because that is the main blocker to enter the market, right? So first we integrate all the learnings we had from the first system and rework most of the modules, and that is the next staple version. And this one we want to clinically certify. And yeah, of course that also comes with contribution management that is new to us, how to make this reliable in a clinical setting and with the certification in place. And then we're trying to figure out together with notified bodies actually, how far is it legally possible to open source clinical certification? Because at the end of the day, you always need, the law is not structured for open source communities. It's structured about one entity that does the development, the procurement, the distribution, the manufacturing, and then does the feedback loops. And doing this in a decentralized setting and publishing this information is very tied with, entangled with liability. So we were trying to go as far as possible, but then we need at some point a legal body that actually distributes these systems. So however, this will go to the major release, and this then should feature a reference system for production and also AI research, because there's a lot of AI research happening in how to improve the picture quality with poor systems, and with that we would have a fully characterized system that makes the data actually comparable. So talking about distribution, that is something also happening now. Founding a company that distributes system or brings them into circulation. So that should ideally feature a sustainable revenue stream for the nonprofit, but also for the entire community. And we're also looking for funding partners. So we have a couple of partners already in place, people that are capable to run the system and build it, but we are lacking a bit on the economical side. So if you are or know someone who's very good at economics, preferably also experienced with medical devices, please come to us. We also have funding schemes available to kick off the founding, so we're not working from scratch here, and ideally also someone non-male would be nice to diversify the group a little bit. And alongside with that, we need to figure out governance and property structures, because we're working for the Global South that doesn't have a say in the development by the development capacities, because they don't have that at the moment, or not much, not at the same level because of lack of funding. So one thing is community-driven commercialization of the system instead of giving it all to Siemens, and then institutionalizing the decision-making in bringing the Global South into to the table. It's already there, but it has to be established, because as soon as money gets into the system, it's very easy to corrupt the idea. Okay, so those are ongoing conversations in the community. If you want to hear more or meet us, we are on Matrix, QR code or link. We also do have email, but we prefer people going there because it makes a lot more sense in the group development and things. Yeah, and that's actually it for now. Happy to have a brief Q&A session.
Are there some questions?
Oh, we have one. Hi, thank you. Have you directly compared an image from the Aussie to like an actual full-size MRI? And is it decipherable, like is it comparable to make a medical analysis?
We do, yeah. One thing is that we do that for research, also for calibrating the image. Because okay. When we get when you get a picture that has a lot of noise, you want to filter the noise. And if you can have a very similar picture of the same patient from a very high resolution, then this helps in the calibration to see where the imperfection of the system lies. But of course, we also talk with doctors, and there's very mixed responses. So in Hamburg, in Germany, for instance, there's a clinic that said they don't really see applications for it because they have the large ones. And why should patients go for the small ones that have less quality? Whereas in Berlin, there's a large clinic that guided us through the clinic and said, we need one here and there, because it's mobile. So you can bring it to patients that you can't move otherwise. and because the low field strength prevents artifacts. So when you have implants, for instance, in the brain or somewhere else, the high field distorts the image, so you can't really see much. So for doctors, it's very hard to assess whether the implant sits in the right way or not. And with low field, you can actually see this. But of course, our target group is the Global South. First, we need to raise more funds in the Global North to push it there, but there's already replications in the Global South, but yet not a like a direct string, like a company pushing it there.
Thanks.
Oh, over there.
Okay.
I know that for big MRIs, you mustn't have any magnetic things around it. How's that with the small one? How are metallic things around it?
Mm. So the magnet here as well is always on because it's a permanent magnet, but 50 millitesla is right at the edge of what an old pacemaker can take. So if you have one of these old pacemakers and you place yourself into or right in front of the bore, then it can get dangerous. But other than that, there's nothing flying around or whatever. So with the metal chain as well, I could demonstrate close to the field how it is aligned, because then it just sits inside the bore. But it's not like you need to have safety lines or whatever. The only safety thing that is required yet is RF shielding, because when you take the pictures and you have these high electromagnetic impulses getting there, that can distort all kinds of things. And that's why usually scanning happens in a chamber. But we also conduct tests to see how bad it actually is, also in which environments, to then have more allowance on, okay, we can actually place it here and do a scan. So there's little tabletop systems that allow that, but that also have a bore of like this diameter. So there's always works, but with a larger one that goes into the area of security standards. But as said, that doesn't compare to the large scanners. Yeah. It's also noiseless, by the way. So you don't hear any of these rumbling or so on, yeah.
I'm coming away to Mike, if that's all right.
Given that it's mobile and you're not strapped down into it, is there any sense of like exposure time in terms of needing to keep your, if you're sticking your arm in it, like very steady, or is there a way of stabilizing it against the patient? I'm used to an MRI where you're like strapped in, you don't move.
Can you repeat?
Just like, do you need to worry because it's on wheels? It seems like someone like is sort of holding their arm in it. If you're doing that kind of MRI, do you need to worry about how stable the patient is when you're taking the picture? Is there anything like a blurry image, or is the exposure so fast? I don't have a sense of the MRI kind of photo taking.
So as of now, the worst thing. So especially with the large scanners, the worst thing that can happen is that it heats you up a lot, so that it cooks you, basically, if there's too much energy. That's why you monitor the energy that goes into the patient. But that only happens with a lot of energy, so to say. Other than that, the next most dangerous thing might be that the thing burns down or...
I know more about like blurriness, like a camera exposure kind of. I don't have a sense of how the MRI takes the picture. Do you need to worry about like physical jitter of the machine not being bolted down?
You know, like, you can place your arm inside whenever you want, so there's no big interaction with that.
Like if I take like a long exposure photo with my camera, it can be blurry if it's not on a tripod, right?
Mm.
If I think of an MRI like a camera, maybe my mental image of an MRI is totally wrong. But if I think of mounting an MRI on wheels and like I think about it as being slightly more shaky, is that at all a reasonable mental image of an MRI taking a photo?
Okay.
That kind of exposure.
So, I mean, scanning happens stationary, of course, not on the go. In the ambulance is a different thing, but... you need to place it somewhere, and the main problem there is temperature. So when you have it in a room with stable conditions, it should have always the same image quality, but when you bring it somewhere else and it's 50 degrees warmer, the remnants, the magnetic strength of the magnets shifts, and so do also some frequencies, and then you need to wait until everything is set and on the same temperature, then you need to recalibrate it, so that process takes a little bit. I don't know how long, actually, it also depends on the conditions, but other than that, it should work fine, but it's one of the things we're trying to find out. Because yet it sits in these labs. We have one system now in Bolivia in a clinic, so there we're trying to find out both of these parameters.
Actually, I'm sorry, time's up. So come after and have the question. But thank you very much for your wonderful talk. And I think it's one of the most cool projects there is at the moment, hardware-wise. So give a big applause to Margot.